Hi, I'm Caitlin Peterson, the editor-in-chief of Business of Home. Welcome to Ask Us Anything, where we're tapping your favorite Trade Tales guests to answer all of your questions about building a better design business. Some weeks, we'll be workshopping a crisis. In others, we'll take a step back to talk about the big picture, things like embracing change, hiring, or how to level up. No question is out of bounds. No question is too large or too small. And we're keeping it confidential so that this is always a safe space to air your frustrations and share your fears. This week, we're fielding a question from a designer about the best way to get insurance coverage and the items they've placed in warehouse storage.
One of my clients sent me an email saying, oh, one of my friends mentioned to me, should I be getting insurance to cover the things in the warehouse? And I was like, I don't think so. But in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I want to cover that. I don't think that's really on the homeowner with the level of service we're trying to offer. But I don't know that that is explicitly covered.
Our question asker wanted to know the best way to protect items in storage for her clients, but her search kept hitting a dead end. Now, she's wondering if anyone out there has stumbled onto a solution.
So I talked to my current insurance agent. We have regular business insurance, errors and omissions, liability, all of that. Mm-hmm. But I talked to her and she said, oh, no, that's not covered. And in commercial insurance, everything is sort of a separate policy. So let me go down the path of researching this policy for this specific need. And she is having a heck of a time getting this covered for me.
Like nobody wants to cover this.
Right. The insurance companies want, okay, where's the warehouse? What's the address? How old's the building? How much inventory is there exactly? And I keep telling her, well, it depends. It depends on the day.
Right.
It depends on the project. I don't just use one warehouse because we have projects in multiple cities. Everything is not in there all at the same time. So all these questions the insurance person is asking my agent, the answers are all, well, it's all over the place. It depends. We've been going back and forth for weeks. And I asked her, is this something where it actually should be on the homeowner? And that would be easier. I just need to tell them. And she said, not really, because typically, at least in our state, what would be covered under the homeowner's policy is 10% of what is covered in the contents of their house. So say their homeowner's insurance policy has 500K covered for their house contents. Only 50K would be covered if something was in a storage unit or with their kids at college or what have you. So I'm sure this is different depending on state, but it just seems like we've hit this thing where there is no easy answer. And it's just left me thinking, well, what are other people doing? Have other designers just not thought about this? Or what is the answer if you don't own your own warehouse and you are using perhaps multiple warehouses, depending on where your project is? Like, what are they doing? Because the warehouse does have insurance, but it is so minimal, it's laughable.
Okay, I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah, because I went that route too. And it's like, oh yeah, we'll replace, you know, 0.001 cent per pound. So for the level of furnishings and stuff that we're doing as designers,
you're going to get a nickel for a credenza?
Yes, yes, that costs you $20,000. Like it does not even begin to cover it. So I'm just wondering what happens here and how do we solve this?
This question taps into the kind of anxiety that can keep you awake at night. That thought, what do I do if the warehouse burns down with all of my clients' new stuff inside? Insurance is never the most exciting topic, but it's absolutely an essential one. In many cases, it's your only real safeguard in the face of catastrophe. And that's why getting it right matters a lot. As we ended our call, I knew just who to connect with to help this designer find her footing. Someone whose relationship with an amazing receiver has transformed the way his business operates, including when it comes to insurance. All of that and more in just a moment. If I know one thing about what your clients are asking for, it's this. They want homes that do more than ever before. And that's why the latest collection from Four Hands is focused on versatility, function, and enduring style. With more than 400 elevated pieces designed to help you help your clients make the most of their homes. You'll find everything from flexible seating for entertaining and room dividers for work-from-home days to outdoor styles that connect effortlessly with your interiors and kitchen islands that pull double duty as a space for snacks after school and cocktails after five. These fluid pieces can be used to add a sense of ease to daily life, and they create transformative spaces where anything feels possible. Find the inspiration for your next project at forehands.com/trade deals. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Brian Paquette. As a guest on Trade Deals last year, Brian explained why geeking out about systems actually goes hand in hand with creative freedom. He's a self-proclaimed logistics fanatic, and I thought he'd be the perfect person to answer today's question. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me, as always. This is, I just look forward to this all the time. So,
well, I was lucky enough to spend some time with you in Los Angeles a few months ago during Legends, but Trade Tales listeners heard from you last spring when you had just emerged from, I think you said it was like a year of really focusing on refreshing your firm's systems. What does that feel like now, like on the other side with a little bit of distance from that effort?
Yeah, I think the thing about systems is it's not done once.
Right?
It's a constant evolution. And there's actually freedom in that, because I think if you look at like systems stuff as like, okay, we're going to spend 6 months, you know, when it's slow or something like that, or even 1 month or whatever, building all this thing and it's the end all be all, you're looking at it in the wrong way, because every client, whether they are in the same state or a different state, or every budget allowance. I mean, we just had an issue where California is now, we have to pay tax in California for California projects as well as in Washington. And so now there's a new system within our firm where we have to look at the scope and budget of the project that we may be getting in California to decide if it's actually worth it monetarily. So, and there's a whole system to that, that's all just really boring numbers and all that kind of stuff. But it's really important, right? Because you can end up like working on a project for a year and a half and get an eighth of what you would make doing on a project in Washington State where we are. But yeah, systems are freeing. I think that's really what it is. Like, I have, you know, for as long as I can remember, been about trying to make what can seem like a really, really stressful and overcomplicated job, because there's no consistency and there's just no consistency throughout our industry, you know, seem really complicated, and try to make it uncomplicated so that I can do the thing that, you know, I really want to do, which is be creative and also have a good life balance. So yes, it's freeing, and yes, it's ongoing. And I think there's freedom in the ongoingness, because it allows you to just be really flexible and be like, hey, that thing happened, let's adjust this.
What was the biggest fix or solve? Was there any one thing that you were like, oh my gosh, we changed this piece of the way we work and it feels just dramatically different, or it makes the work feel so much better?
So I've always, well, not always, but I have been for the past 6 years been in, you know, it's just me and one other person, or me and two other people. And that's really, really important to me. And, you know, we dealt with all the systems stuff, like, you know, onboarding and invoicing and tracking and client portals and all that kind of stuff. But one thing I didn't really think about would, which is important in a larger firm when you're dealing with 50 projects a year and stuff like that, was extracting all of my effort into a document, or extracting all of my knowledge into a document, meaning I'm heading into a different phase of life and I don't want to do this install, or it's not worth my time to do this install because of scheduling or vacation or something like that sort of thing. How can someone else who's been with the firm for 5 years and should very much be able to handle an install by themselves, do it with the utmost confidence? So this document that says, this is what a Brian Paquette Interiors install looks like. These are all the little things that you may not see, but I fixate on, whether it's how to style a bookcase or the clearance of a rug in a room or the type of light bulbs that I like for certain things, or a checklist just to sort of like take the anxiety out of an install. They're always going to be anxious. They're even anxious for me. We have one this Thursday. Like I'm not like nervous like I used to be 10 years ago, but there's always anxiety around
it. It hums in your stomach, right?
100%, right? And most of that anxiety, honestly, is like my own buildup and it has nothing to do with anything. And then there's also like creative anxiety, which is like it's excitement, right? So if I'm, you know, wanting to hand this over to a person, it should be on me that if I want the best results, and I do actually want to step away from this, I needed to put in the work to build this document that set up this person for success so that they felt comfortable. And so that the client, when they walked into the house, like, you know, at the end of the evening, once it was done, they didn't know that I wasn't there. It's always about freeing ourselves from the things that we don't necessarily need to do, you know, whether it is, my employee has been using AI and ChatGPT because ChatGPT now has my voice in terms of emails. And she is very aware that her voice in emails, like unchecked, is very different than my voice. And we want to have one, and she came to me with this, you know, like, and she was like, I want to have one cohesive voice. And so what she does is she asks it to put it in my voice. She writes all of the things, whether it's bullet points or whatever. And then she asks it to put it in my voice. And so all of our emails are very, very similar in tone. So it's just like, it's just tools, you know, just like
all these
things that can free you up of time. Doesn't mean that you need to fill that time with more work. That's not the goal here. The goal is just to be efficient so that there's, you actually feel space to go on vacation and without, you know, worry or anything like that.
What is that document, you know, that install document, for example, what does that look like? Is that a Google document that's 8 pages long, single spaced, that's just sort of like a brain dump of things? What actually are you putting on the page?
We built it together and it's basically like, I just used Acrobat to do it. And like, I'm not techie. So, but it was like everything. I knew that I wanted to make this thing. And so I used an example project that had all the things that I knew, like everything from like, this is actually how I style a bookshelf. Like, this is how it looks like when I do it. And here's, you know, the amount of books and stuff like that. I know this sounds silly, but, and here's the space. Here's where I like a drinks table next to a chair. This is how I like my pillows fluffed on a sofa. I mean, really getting minute. This is how I lay a throw blanket, you know, on a thing. This is how I make a bed. I'm very methodical about how I make our beds. It's really simple. There's no question. It's one way. So it was very easy. So there's pictures.
So it's super visual.
Yeah, it's super visual. And then there's also like a checklist for like, have you gone through the inventory for the project and either purchased all the light bulbs or made sure all the vendors have sent light bulbs for those fixtures? Have you looked at the house in terms of like where there's going to be a credenza with two lamps on it? Do you need an extension cord? What size extension cord do you need? We have an install kit as well that has everything from like, you know, screwdrivers to steamers, little things like, did you get flowers? Did you ask about flowers? Did you, you know, like, where are those flowers going? Did you get a candle? Did you get all the branded matches to go with said candle? Where is that candle being left? If they have young children, don't leave it in this certain area. Maybe leave it on one of their bedsides. Like, really, like, minutia. And the thing is like, you think about one thing and then you think about another. And so I just literally went through the house from the entry door, you know, and then to the end of the install.
What else is going on at the firm these days? What are you most excited about when you walk into work?
I think I'm leaning into the stride of things right now. Like, I think age has a lot to do with that too. You just learn like what matters and what doesn't. I'm excited when I walk in the office that we have like a client roster full of people with mutual respect. Like that I don't have
that's
this
beautiful
anxiety. Yeah, it's like, it's simple, but it's like, I don't want to have this low-level anxiety constantly about managing the expectations of people. Like, that sort of thing is, it's untenable. Like, if all I'm thinking about is managing expectations, like, there's the robber of all of the joy of this job. I want to work for good people. I want to do the job that I'm supposed to do. And I want to be creatively challenged.
I love that. Are you ready to give some advice?
Oh, absolutely. This is a good topic for me. I love logistics.
Okay, well, this week we are fielding a question from a designer who actually heard a casual mention of warehouse insurance on this show 2 weeks ago and thought, wait, I'm struggling with that right now. So can we talk about how you navigate this? Because I know that your firm doesn't kind of personally carry the insurance. What has your solution been?
So, we don't personally carry the insurance. We carry standard business insurance, and that's what's been advised for us. I want to say that I have not come up with this answer. I want to say that our warehouse receiver and installation team here in Seattle, that services all of Washington for us, they're like, I don't know, just I hold everybody else like up to them, and that's really unfair. But I've worked with them for 16 years. So they started not as a residential warehouse. They started as being the receiver for places like B&B Italia, and they would receive whole cargo loads of furniture, and they would be, basically hired by these, De La Spada and, all of these other companies to learn about the product, because they were not only receiving it, but then they were installing it. And, some of that stuff can be complicated. And so they wanted experts on the ground in Washington state. And so that's kind of how it worked. And I happened to work for B&B Italia mm-hmm. when I first moved to Seattle. So I met these guys through that. And when I left there and started my firm, I needed a warehouse, and I just asked them if they would be open to doing this. And they had never done it, but they were like, yeah, sure. Like, of course you can ship anything you want here. So that started that relationship. And we have been, I consider them like my number one partners in business since then. And so, I have taught them a lot of things about, it's very different when you're bringing an entire house load of things, versus one sofa from one dealer to a house. I've also brought them along, they did not do mounting and art installation up until about 5 years ago. I think there was a time where I was like, could you guys hang a mirror? And then that basically turned into, they now install everything that is hung in our projects, from art and mirrors. So they took the time to train people to do that. So that's one less vendor I have to bring on site. So when it came to insurance, this sort of backs up. They came to us a couple of years ago, and they knew that we would have all these projects, right? And they're receiving them at different times. And what they came to us because they knew that they asked for basically like a finish schedule, not a finish schedule for a house, that would have paint colors and plumbing and stuff like that. They wanted a furnishing schedule.
Okay.
And so we took off, we already made those. And because those went in our client portal, so a client could see when it was ordered and when its expected date of receival was going to be. So our receiving warehouse wanted that. They also wanted a copy of all of our invoices for goods. And what they did with this information is they knew everything that was going to come in for that client before they received it. They also knew the value of everything that was going to come in when they received it. And as they received a good, and as they charged monthly insurance per square footage, they added on the insurance for the amount that was received in that month, right? So it grew. And then the insurance part of it at the end of it was also like, we have a choice. So that one they fully cover. They say, we're just fully covering this. It is full coverage with no deductible. There's no choice in that. And I would have chosen that anyway. When it comes to the installation, the designer or whoever has the opportunity to say delivery with no insurance, delivery with, like our guest has said, minimal insurance, like 10 cents to the dollar, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or full coverage with no deductible. And we just choose full coverage and no deductible. And the reason being is that
this is how we do our business. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not my stuff. It's not in your home yet. So it is not covered. And, you know, the fact of the matter is like, there is a chance that on the way from the receiving warehouse, a bunch of things could happen. Who knows what could happen? And, you know, if we're talking about a $5,000 charge for $250,000 worth of goods, it's sort of nominal. That stuff, you know, it could be antique. Most of it's custom and most of it has a long lead time. So what is the value to you? But the fact of the matter is like, this is all talked about in our onboarding document. No one really pays attention to it. And obviously they don't realize it because it's just a line item in their installation costs. You know, it says like install, 6+ guys, 8 hours plus tip. And then there's another line item of insurance. And so what I would say to this person is like, I have brought things to my warehouse. They have brought things to me. Like I truly see them as a partner. So I don't know, maybe you bring what we have learned from our warehouse and just bring it to them. The fact of the matter is this has actually become a profit center for both of us. So they make out and we make out. The fact of the matter is when you sell insurance and the insurance is not used, someone's making money. So I think what has happened during the pandemic is so many people got projects in remote areas. You know, people moved to remote areas for like second homes or main homes. And I had this as well. Like there were receiving warehouses in those places, but they were used to receiving like pallets of soda and refrigerators. They weren't used to receiving and inspecting $20,000 sofas, you know, and dealing with that and then maybe installing it. And so I think there's a learning curve and we had that. And so what we've done is we've just created another document or, you know, as easily just explained how this is how our warehouse does it. Here's the results of how they're doing it. And here's what you could see, you know, if you take this on.
Are most people interested in that?
100%. We have seen so many of our receivers. And I mind you, like I'm not working all over the country. I mainly work on the West Coast between California, Washington, and Idaho. So, you know, I haven't had to train, you know, 9 million people in the middle of nowhere, but like I've had no pushback at all. It's like working with an architect, you know, it's like it's having 5 people in the room building a house and me being humble to what I don't know and the architect being humble to what they don't know and the landscape person and the client and all of these people being humble to what they don't know, but understanding that together we can come up with the best solution possible.
Hey, designers. I'm back with a quick reminder about the latest collection from 4Hands. 400 timeless styles that flex, move, contain, and connect to help your clients make the most of their homes. Plus, the 4Hands Art Studio has welcomed Benjamin Galvin to its roster of artists, using its best-in-class printers and scanners to capture the textures and dimensions of his organic, cubist-inspired works. New has never looked so good, and I can't wait for you to check it out. Find the inspiration for your next project at 4hands.com/tradetales. Have you made an effort to kind of consolidate as much of your business to one receiving partner as possible? Or is that idea of having multiple warehouses kind of feasible and logical to you?
I can't fathom having, but the thing is if you were in Texas, I'm in Washington, and Washington is not a tiny state, but our receiving warehouse will service anywhere in Washington. I mean, if I wanted them to go to Oregon, they would do it for me. They've gone 4 hours away for us. We put them up, you know, we've done large installations, and I'm not the only designer that has done that with them. So I think it's maybe case specific, but I can't even fathom having a separate warehouse in Washington. It just seems silly to me. But currently we're working with 3 different receiving warehouses in 3 different states. And they're all different. They absolutely are. They are different in levels of communication. They're different in their way that they do it. They're different in the way that they bill. Like I said, I've got a pretty high bar for, you know, what is done in Washington. But I don't think of that as a detriment. I think of that as just like, well, this is how we do it here. And it's not like I need you to do it. It's just like, I'm going to throw this at you and see how you respond.
Yeah. You mentioned that this is profitable for you to work this way. Can you break that down a little bit and explain kind of the mechanics? I know you're putting a markup on a lot of these fees. Can you explain how that works and why that's so important to you?
I want to be clear. I put the same markup on every single thing that is billed to our clients.
Perfect.
You know, we've talked about this before. Like, simplicity is really important to me, not because, I mean, partially because of me, but also because I want to, you know, I hear these firms talk about like, we do 15% on this and 10% on antiques and 20% on out of state shipping and blah, 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 blah. You are adding confusion to an industry that has zero consistency. And I think, so we put markup on all of that because this is a business. It's just simple as that. You don't, like, when you buy a can of soda at Target, all of those things are built into it as just one price, right? Like, they are charging you for receiving that can of Coke, for selling that can of Coke, for all of the staff that are involved. Like, all of those types of things are built into the price of that. You don't ask that because it's not broken down line item. And I've thought, I'm like, you know, keep it simple. I think the reason people get really nervous about charging people for things is that there is no consistency in our industry, and everybody's trying to create their own consistency without necessarily having an MBA.
Can I ask you what that one markup is on everything?
30%. Anytime we are inputting a thing into an invoice, it is marked up 30%.
How do you talk about that with clients?
I don't. Really, and meaning like I don't have belabored conversations because it's unnecessary. When you start out a conversation feeling like you are apologizing, when you over-explain something, it makes it seem to your client that you aren't confident in your business.
Or like you're trying to get away with something, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the fact of the matter is I'm not doing anything. I'm just running a business. But because there's so much lack of consistency, and some clients might interview six designers in the same city, and every one of those six designers has a completely different way of running their business, I get why it's complicated. So that's why I have made our business simple. And that's why I've made the explanation simple. It is all explained in our onboarding documents. And if clients have questions during, you know, say the first interview, I'm more than happy to explain it, but I don't overly explain it. Our clients also say this too, like, we're not a big hourly biller. We're just not. Mostly because I don't bill hourly to manage the logistics of our projects. That is built into that 30%. I also don't charge hourly to order our product or price out our product or budget.
So you're only charging hourly for the design time.
Design
and
time.
And like meetings.
If one of us has to go and meet an electrician to go through the scope of work.
Right. Like, I got in a car, I drove to do a thing, and I couldn't do anything else.
Exactly. But we have calls with our logistics team prior to installs. I don't bill for that because that's all part of it. So yeah, it's like, we don't have these insane hourly bills every month. And I'm totally fine with that because I know how our business is run, and I know how it can remain profitable.
For someone starting this conversation with their warehouse and saying, you know, okay, I now am aware that there's another way of doing this where you could shoulder the work, basically, of, you know, offering insurance coverage for this product that you're storing for me. What is the upside for the warehouse?
The upside is profit.
Mm-hmm.
Upside is profit and also just peace of mind. I mean, it's really just as simple as that. The other thing too is that there is, like, I know our warehouse gets a lot more interior design business because of how they are running as organized as a well-oiled design firm, because they know that that's their number one customer. If they were not as well-oiled, they wouldn't be in competition. I would say the same thing to like a wallpaper installer. I'm like, what is your end game? Do you want to work with really organized people, or do you, you know, I actually had this, you know, conversation with a wallpaper installer. I was like, do you want to work with retail, or do you want to work with interior designers where you're going to get constant work? You need to understand what your client base is. And if your client base is organized interior designers, I don't know many interior designers that wouldn't require this.
Yeah.
Because if you have any, I don't know, I guess if you have like any experience or have heard any sort of horror stories about insurance, you would just be like, I have to get this covered. And you know, any business consultant would say, it's not on you to do it. That's the risk is not on you. That's just not how it works.
If this designer's warehouse, you know, gets this idea from her and is like, no, that's not for us. We do business this way. Is the answer just that it's time to find another warehouse?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like any sort of, think of it as another subcontractor. If you got a painter, an electrician that is just not meeting expectations, have a clear conversation as to why they're not meeting expectations. You know, it just is what, that's just business.
When you went looking for partners, you know, in Idaho and California, in other states, what were you looking for initially in a good partner? What did you expect them to have figured out already? And then what were you willing to bring to them and work with them on?
So it's like, I knew my expectations in Washington, right? Like I knew all of the things that were happening in Washington. So the first thing I did is I asked friends in California, like, especially like when we were working in Palm Springs, there's one, that's it. Are they my favorite? No, but there's one and they do an adequate job. And their installers are like, they're lovely people. Do they do as great of a job as Washington? No. Have I brought all of this information to it and it's kind of gone over their heads? Yes. But it's adequate. And I honestly don't have a choice, because if I sent all of that stuff to, say, Los Angeles at my receiver there that I do love, our logistics, you know, estimate would go maybe from 20% to 25%. And that just seems unfair to our clients. So yeah, I ask designer friends, I'm like, who are you using? And I've just, you know, basically interviewed people, or I've tried out people, you know, in small ways first. Our main receiver in California actually did not start out as a receiver and installer. They started out as a trucking company. Hmm. So they would pick up from our furniture manufacturers in Los Angeles, and they were doing loops from Los Angeles to Seattle.
Okay.
And they were dropping off all the way, and they would do a loop every other week, which was really helpful for us. So they were doing that sort of stuff. And then unbeknownst to me, they started doing receiving and inspection and then installation. They started receiving first, like receiving an inspection that was, and they let me know that they were doing that now, that they would love to work with me on any projects that I work in California. And that's kind of how that happened. And then I was surprised, I thought I was going to have to hire a separate installation crew. And so when I went to, they actually came to me, they're like, do you know when you're going to be installing this project so we can schedule it? And I didn't even know at the time. That's on me. I think I was just in the weeds or whatever. So it's trust your colleagues, vet them first, and then your expectations just have to be managed down from there. You know, I just don't expect the same in Palm Springs as I do in Washington or Los Angeles, because I have choice in both of those places.
Well, this is great advice that you've given today. What is some of the best advice you've ever received?
It's a little two-pronged, but it kind of is the same thing. It's, you know, never pretend to understand anyone's day. And then just always have an understanding that, like, your expectations of them will never be met and their expectations of you will never be met. And that's okay. Because if we just, we focus on that, we lose all the joy. It's basically just about the human condition. It's like, if we all relate and understand that we are all flawed human beings, it's such a better way to enter a meeting and enter a relationship. It's kind of like this, just this low level thought, you know, it's like, it's a way of being where it's, I'm not going to let something as silly as an email, you know, bother me. I'm also going to look at that email and not pretend to understand what's going on in that person's life, because that person is not my husband. That person is a client. Maybe they're a long-term client. Maybe they're a short-term client, but at the end of the day, we never truly know what's going on in anybody's brains and how they come to things, whether that's a meeting or an email or, you know, anything. And so it's like, if you can just all, I think that's just like overarching. We have this tendency in America just to, you know, shoot before we think. And if we all just kind of slowed down a little bit and understood that everybody's dealing with something, I think we'd all be a little bit happier.
That's our show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And for everyone listening with a question of your own, I'd love for you to ask us anything. Don't worry, we'll keep it anonymous. Please start the conversation by sending me an email at tradetales@businessofhome.com. If you're enjoying Trade Tales, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts to help others discover the show. And if you're looking for even more great business advice, head on over to businessofhome.com. Trade Deals is produced by me, Caitlin Peterson, and Caroline Burke. This episode was edited by Caroline Burke and Michael Castaneda. Our theme music is by Kyle Scott Wilson. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here next week.